Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Dr. Sarah Cleary, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, how are you?
I'm good, not a bother.
Okay.
I'm here on site at Seven Family Festival, so I'm half a dozen of myself running around today.
Okay, and listen, people are wondering, okay, who is this woman and why are they exchanging salutations on the radio? So I'll explain. You are a horror academic and a consultant. That's the first time I've introduced anyone as a horror academic. So we're going to talk a little bit about horror movies. So the TV listings, obviously, the time of year, full of older horror movies being shown between now and Halloween. In the cinema listings, I see Halloween Ends, Smile, Coraline, Pray for the Devil, all out this week. Next week, 40th anniversary, restored versions of Poltergeist and The Thing. A 35th anniversary of The Lost Boys. That's 35 is stretching it a bit there. So look, horror all around us. Clearly, it's still a huge interest in it. Any of those any good, by the way, or any of those pique your interest?
Oh, listen, this is our Christmas time, Brendan.
Yeah.
So every one of them is piquing my interest. It is amazing to have so much horror in the cinema, so much choice.
So even though you're an expert, Sarah, do you still get scared at horror films?
Absolutely. Every time. I mean, well, not every time, but there's certainly, I mean, the thing about horror is that horror is so subjective, and what scares me won't scare you. What scares you won't scare another person. So really it's about kind of tapping into our own fears, and we all have our own fears. Of course, there's universal fears about loneliness, grief, death, trauma, but everyone has their thing, and I've got a couple of my things, and whenever horror brings them up, that's when I get scared.
Okay, so it's kind of subjective kind of thing. Now, we're going to play a few clips from classic horror movies in a couple of minutes, but I have been warned to give a heads up in case some people wouldn't like it, because apparently it is actually quite traumatic for daytime listening. But so we give people that warning and we'll give it a few minutes. Why do we do it to ourselves, Sarah? Why do we like to scare ourselves?
So I suppose it's a couple of different things. I mean, the first one is people always refer to horror films like a roller coaster. And I prefer to think of them more as a kind of a realization that we're alive. Horror films do the same thing to us, that whenever we're on the street and we go to step out in front of a bus and our friend grabs us in, and for that split second, we stop worrying about our mortgage, the car, the kids, the shopping. And for a split second, we say to ourselves, Jesus, I was nearly dead and now I'm alive. And it's this invigorating feeling that we get from it. Horror does a very similar thing. It reminds us we'll die, so we might as well live. Memento mori. So very much a lot of people kind of indulge in that, and they get a lot of kind of frisson from the idea of really just how vulnerable we are. Now, all this is, of course, working on an unconscious level. We don't necessarily go around thinking about this stuff all the time. But really it taps into an unconscious or subconscious that we really forget to live sometimes, and horror films remind us to do that.
But in a safe space, I suppose. Yeah. Well, okay. Now, you have a master's degree in zombies, which is again a sentence I've never said to anyone before. So, what are the key elements to a classic horror movie?
First of all, John Carpenter, the great director, said that there really is only two types of horror films: when the monster is out there, and when the monster is inside. And after that, really, there's another, we can kind of blow that idea out. And that idea really comes down to the idea that the monster lives within us. So we have that a lot in the likes of Dracula. We have it a lot in the likes of Frankenstein. They're the kind of archetypical types of movies. Then after that, then we have the monster is out there and we must protect ourselves. And that feeds into another really strong archetype of classic horror. And that, of course, is the good space turned bad, or the uncanny space that newcomers come into. And really, every single horror film can be divided up into those four archetypes.
Okay. Right. So we're going to take the clips now from classic horror movies, okay? And again, I'm reiterating, I can't wait to hear this because I haven't heard it, but this apparently might be a bit scary for younger ears and maybe for some older ones too.
Stop calling me, you sick!
Listen to me. We traced the call. It's coming from inside the house. You hear me? It's coming from inside the house.
Here's Johnny.
Hi, I'm Jackie. Wanna play?
Michael. Be one of us.
The power of Christ compels me!
That the power of Christ compels you!
It's alive!
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you!
Okay, so we can sit here comfortable in the daylight and say that didn't do a thing for me. And then when I'm alone in the house at night or whatever, later on, that'll all come back. So what are the various genres then within horror, Sarah?
Yeah, so I suppose the dominant genre that everyone thinks of when they think about horror is, of course, the supernatural or the paranormal. And that's very much the haunted house kind of idea. And this stems back all the way, of course, to the Gothic. And really, Ireland is a major player in the idea of the ghost story. And that follows all the way up to most recent films that we have now, where if there's anything haunted or supernatural. The next then we would have kind of playing into the idea of the slasher film. And that very much has the trope of the final girl. And of course, we've seen the most iconic of all final girls, Laurie Strode, in Halloween Ends, and really coming to their end of her reign as the ultimate final girl. And that's when a woman kind of starts off kind of a nubile young thing and then is transformed by her experiences with the monster. And then after that, then we kind of get into the more creature feature element of it. This often can have an environmental aspect to it. So you'll have attack of the certain creatures, attack of certain monsters. And then my favorite monster of them all, of course, is the zombie and the subgenre of zombie. But there's an even more intense form of horror that perhaps isn't to everyone's taste, and that is realist horror. And that very much plays into all our deepest, darkest fears.
Tell me about that.
So realist horror really is when we take what's known as the banality of horror and we play around with it. And like most horror films, actually, regardless of subgenre, kind of play into this idea of the banality of horror. We're not great at coping with when horrible things happen to us. So when a neighbor does an atrocity, or when someone dies suddenly, or when we hear something horrific, we're not very good at processing it. You know, you often hear whenever a murder happens, this is such a quiet town, nothing like that ever happens. We're not very good at understanding why things happen. So what horror does, as you quite rightly said, Brendan, a little bit earlier, this idea of the safe space, it provides a fictional safe space for us to discuss and think about very unsafe things. And this is what realist horror, and indeed all horror, tends to do quite a lot. It's this fictional, often hyperbolic, often fantastical, often gory space in which we can delve down into the deeper layers of things like grief, trauma, mental illness, death, life, and kind of work through them safe in the knowledge, Asher, it's only a horror film.
You made an interesting point there a minute ago when you were talking about the types of horrors, though, that there is meaning underneath it. Like, a lot of them are kind of allegorical, are they? Like, you would say they reflect the concerns of the day sometimes.
100%. And all you have to do really is look at, you know, the Great Depression. So in 1929, when in America, and it's no coincidence that when the Great Depression was at its peak, really the universal horror film came into its own. And we have, in the space of really 3 or 4 years, some of the most iconic horror films ever. And we have Dracula, we have in 1931, Frankenstein in the same year. And then after that, then we had Freaks. Now, a very kind of nasty and not very nice kind of type of commentary started swirling around during the Great Depression. And this was, of course, eugenics. Who has the right to breed? Who has the right to do this, that, and the other thing? And this film, this idea was very much reflected in a lot of the horror film at the time, such as Freaks, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah, Freaks was, I remember seeing Freaks when I was very young, like, and it really was kind of a horrible film in a way, wasn't it?
It's still startling to this day.
Listen, kids can be very kind of dark and everything, but then a lot of people would say, I'm not letting the kids see a scary movie because, you know, they won't sleep tonight or whatever. Do you think we should let them indulge it?
I think so. And I think every parent knows their child. And my key thing here is I never like to use the word exposure, or I never like to kind of press horror on anybody, child or adult. Mm. Every child, every parent knows their limits with their kids. You know, kids are afraid of the strangest things sometimes. But also in the same breath, I would make the argument that kids also are a little braver than adults. It's almost like as we grow older, we learn how to fear. And if you look back at all the old horror films, and even in, you know, in popular culture today, the monster is usually an ally of the child, because the monster really is only the mirror that we use to hold up to society. So if you go back to the stem of the word monster, it actually means to demonstrate, demonstra. And that means we're demonstrating the ills of society. So in actual fact, the monster acts as something of a harbinger to children. Don't, you know, don't talk to strangers, stay with your mommy and daddy, go to sleep at night, don't go out into the dark at nighttime. And the monster, really, I'll always make the argument, is a friend of the child. So absolutely, ratings are there for a reason, but let them indulge.
Okay, people will be thinking now that they know the science of it all and everything, they'll be like, I'm grand now, I can go watch a horror film. But of course, all this rationality will go out the window once they see a child say, I see dead people or something. Listen, before you go, clowns. Why are clowns so scary? Because they really shouldn't be, you would think.
Do you know what? Again, Brendan, I'm a big believer in this idea of inherited trauma. So it's kind of this, this goes all the way back to the court jester. And even in medieval times, we had the jester. And the jester was actually the most important person in the room. The jester was the only one that was allowed to take the mick out of anyone. So if you were having an affair or stealing anything, you know, woe betide you, because the jester would call you out. So on the one hand, we kind of grew up with this idea that there was a fear of what the clown knew. What is the smile hiding? And then the other the other aspect of it is that we don't like extremes, right? So we kind of like everything to be a little bit, you know, vanilla. We like people not to be too happy, not to be too sad, you know. And the clown, he represents this extremity. What's the face paint hiding? And we were really, really terrified by this idea of extremity. So in the same way we're terrified of an extremely monstrous, angry person, we're actually terrified as well by the extremity of somebody really happy.
Dr. Sarah really Cleary, that did not help at all. People are more afraid of clowns after that. But listen, thank you very much for setting us straight on all that. Dr. Sarah Cleary, we'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.